Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill. I'll be your host this evening. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Pompano Beach, Florida, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. With me this evening is Tammy Schaffstall, also from Pompano Beach, Florida. In fact, she's sitting close by. She's going to be backing us up and be an additional voice on the show tonight. We are waiting for our special guest to call in, our co-host for the night, Dr. Jaime Romo, who was with us a few weeks back, did such a great job, we wanted to invite him to become a permanent member of this group. And we had this open slot. It's a little strange because we usually have only, if there is, a fifth Tuesday or Thursday, there's only one. But this month, we had two. We had, because the first was on a Tuesday and the 31st tonight is on a Thursday, there were actually two opportunities for extra people. One on the two nights ago when we had a fifth Tuesday, and tonight, which is the fifth Thursday, the last day of the month. So we're here holding on, hoping that Jaime will call in. But in the meantime, let me give you the phone number, because if Jaime doesn't call in, and regardless, we want to have a panel here. We can have a nice discussion about anything you want to, really, about child abuse and trauma, and certainly about NASCA itself. The number to dial, of course, is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. That is the dedicated phone number we use every night on the show, five nights a week, Monday to Friday, always at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific. Now, Tammy, I know you, when you do these shows, like to tell people what the format is and also what the mission statement is for the Blog Talk group here that we have at Stop Child Abuse Now. So I'm going to do that. We have a 908 caller. It might be Carol. Whoa, calling in, and that would be great if it is. That's a New Jersey phone number, and it looks like it is Carol. Let me just say, like Tammy usually does, that NASCA is a organization, a nonprofit organization that is self-supporting through any contribution we get from our own membership or our supporters. So through our own contributions, we don't belong to any other group. Nor do we have to respond to any other group. We're independent of everybody and have a single purpose: to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do this with only two goals. One, to educate the public, especially as related to get society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic and worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who's interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That's what NASCA is all about. Now, we have about 30 different things that we do. They're all free. There is no requirement to pay any dues or fees at NASCA. You are a member of NASCA and our NASCA family if you say you are, just because you say you are. And you are free to use any and all of the tools that we have, including social media tools, contact lists, information about how to start a group, all kinds of things, plus many, many resources. And this is just one of the things that we do, this radio show. It's one of the 30 things we do. But it's a significant one because it's how we carry the message. Frequently, a newcomer will encounter NASCA through some other way. Perhaps one of us will share about NASCA to that person, and frequently we'll share about the show. And their first introduction to NASCA is hearing us on the show. So it's a terrific outreach tool, is the point. Because, as I said, we do 5 shows a week. Now, we've done, I believe we're coming up on 2,250 shows, or a little more than that, maybe, of this style, plus another 600 of the other style of show that we do that we had previously done under the name Community Matters, which now we have suspended under NASCA. But this point is that we have various formats, various nights, and tonight should be a call-in show for anyone who has a question for any of the 3 of us that are here, and hopefully more will gather to address, or an issue that you'd like explained, or a topic you'd like to hear talked about. The number to dial again is 646-595-2118. And let me, without further ado, introduce my trailing co-host tonight, Tammy Schaffstall, first, and welcome her to the show. Tammy, thanks for being with me tonight.
Well, thank you for having me here tonight, Bill, and happy Halloween. Hope everybody's had a safe evening of passing out candy. We did that at my house as well, so thank you for having me.
Oh, terrific. Okay. And next, last but not least, at least at the moment, Carol from New Jersey. I see that Carol is still wearing her mask. Carol, nice costume there.
Funny guy. Let me tell you something. Some guy told me that I was real pretty. I gave him extra candy. Oh, my God. I said, that'll buy you more candy. See that? Anyway, oh, my God. Let me tell you something. I stopped at 70. One thing they do in Oxford, New Jersey, this little town, is they celebrate very heavily. They celebrate Halloween.
Hmm.
I don't know what that means.
Interesting.
I'm just telling you. That's what they do. Yes, they do.
And it sounds like Tammy had some as well. I didn't have any. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, last year at this time, exactly at this time, I was moving into this house. And I had bought some candy. You know, I figured, oh, maybe some kids are going to show up, and I'm in the middle of moving things into the house, and sure enough, they showed up. But this year, oh, my God, I don't know how many it was because I stopped counting, like I said, at 70. And the costumes were very, very creative, very creative. What I did like to see was that the Oxford Police, not fire department, but first responders, things like that, they were going up and down the street. And there were no police presence, but at least they were there. And I was happy that there were a lot of parents with these kids. The older ones didn't need the parents, but, you know, the younger ones, I mean, they were well protected. So that makes me feel better, safer in this neighborhood, that at least they do watch their kids, and that's important.
Yeah, it sure is. These children that go out, sometimes they're so vulnerable. It's not even safe to go in a group anymore. I think that's what we used to do. We used to at least go with a couple other kids. But I think today, a parent is not wise unless they have an adult with the group. I think that's really needed. But that's a good response. 70, my goodness. And Tammy, it sounds like you had some revelers as well. I didn't have any here at this store. Of course, there's kind of a gate in front of the store, so maybe they were not feeling like they were welcomed, and that's possibly even true. Tammy, do you have more than a couple, or how did it go?
We had a few. Trevor was my son's on the front porch with a box of candy, giving it out. But while I was home, I probably had 10.
Okay. Well, I think being on the porch with a box of candy is a good incentive. Go ahead,
Well, you know how I am. I bought far too much, of course. All right, this is the way I am. And I thought, my God, I've got to get rid of this candy, or I'm going to eat it. I will. I'll eat it. You know. So I went out into the street with this great big bowl, and I said, please take this off my hands. Everybody's laughing, and we all had a very, very good time. It was a way of meeting people that I hadn't met before. Because they're on the other side, and I'm on one side, they're on the other side of, you know, the streets here. And so I had fun, you know, and it was it's a fun time of the year around here. And the kids are so creative with their costumes, you know, it's really excellent. So, you know, yeah, I was happy about that. And at any time, I could be, I might get a call at any time because of the illness in the family. Again, here we go. I bought it. I think somebody put a hex on me. I swear to God. But, yeah, I was at the hospital all day yesterday. I will be there. I'll be here tomorrow night to run the show. But
okay.
She's not doing too well. Yeah.
No, huh? Yeah. Well,
no.
Obviously, our condolences and sympathies to you and your family for the illness in the family. And we certainly send our prayers. Yeah.
Now they're coming in from all over. It's one of those deals. So, you know, I'll be home though to run the show. The worst would be is if I called from Michelle's house, you know, but I'll run the show.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So,
we are still waiting for Jaime Romo. Dr. Jaime is from San Diego. He's an educator, consultant, author, and a commissioned minister who promotes healing from child abuse and the prevention of child abuse, particularly abuse by religious authorities or those in the context of religious settings. He wrote a really good workbook called Healing the Sexually Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters, which I do recommend. I hope that he'll call in. I hope that he'll become one of our regular co-hosts on the rotation starting in November. I invited him to do both. He thought he would be able to call in tonight, and he's not done so yet. So we're waiting for him. But in the meantime, we're going to open this up to anybody who calls in to accept any kind of question or comment or topic that they'd like to hear talked about. And we want people to call in. 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. I was the featured person on Tuesday, and that's because the month of October in 2019 had a third Thursday and a third Tuesday, which is very odd. Doesn't happen very often at all. But I filled in one of those slots. I usually do the fifth, either one, whatever it is. But this month there were two of them. And then I asked Jaime to call in tonight. We'll see if he calls in. Doesn't look like he's going to. So in the meantime, I'll just throw it open to both of you, and perhaps one of you has a topic you'd like to start with. None of us has to take a particular lead. We're all three very involved. NASCA family members, we're all on the board at NASCA, the three of us here, and can answer questions of each other or talk about anything somebody wants. So let me just ask both Tammy and Carol then to the audience, until somebody else calls in, if there's anything on their mind they'd like all three of us to talk about. Anything from either of you?
No, I don't really have anything quite yet. But, you know, I do like to mention, okay, when I run the show or even just like on a night tonight, I give these stats out, these little stats here. Every time I think about it, and today I was thinking about it, maybe because it's Halloween, I don't know. And, you know, I did find out some strange information. I'll get into that, too, about the statistics of the known so-called pedophiles. A lot of times we go to our listings in our area, and we think that we have all the pedophiles there right before us. You know, they have their names and so forth. And they're tier one, tier two. Tier three is not usually there because they're usually incarcerated. But one thing I did find out, about that, and I'm going to look into it, is that only two-thirds, okay, two-thirds of the pedophiles that have been caught and all this stuff, they're not even published. Now, I want to look into that because that, to me, is a very scary thing. That means the people that we see in our area, a lot of times they'll have the red dots, you know, so you can go on and you can see where they are in your area, especially when you live in a more urban area. This, of course, isn't urban now. I'm out in the sticks. But, you know, you think you have a guideline. You think you have a guideline and a good one. But here come to find out they don't show half the people, and it's because they say that they have their rights to privacy. And that there's a law that you know, I'm going to look into this, Bill, because this bothers me. I feel like the pedophiles / sex offenders, they have too many rights, okay? And, you know, we, certainly as children when we were growing up, and all the things that we went through, we didn't have any rights, you know, and so this bothers me. So I just wanted to make mention of that. And when I find out information, if that is true, I will let it be known. But anyway, well, the statistics that I like to talk about really quick, the chances of being struck by lightning is 1 in 6.2 million. 1 in 6.2 million. Chances of dying in a plane crash is 1 in 400,000. Chances of dying in an auto accident is 1 in 19,000. Chances of a child being raped or sexually abused is 1 in 4. So I always bring that up when I think about it because I want people out there to understand. The other things I just read off, you know, The 1 in 400,000 chances of dying in a plane crash is 1 in 400,000. Chances of being struck by lightning is 1 in 6.2 million. Chances of dying in an auto accident, 1 in 19,000. But chances of being raped or sexually abused is 1 in 4. So, you know, it always awes me. You know, I can't, it dumbfounds me that we go out there. We present the statistics that we have, the ones that we know to be true and that we can all agree on. And also we try so hard to educate about prevention, intervention, and recovery. And prevention, of course, is a big, heavy one because when you have stats like that, 1 in 4, which we know about, but we're always trying to educate the public. You know, it seems to me that people should even be trying harder to become more involved.
You know, we're having more people show up in our social media groups that are saying
something. I can't hear you, Bill. You're fading away.
I don't think I'm fading away. You need to raise your volume.
Maybe it's my phone. Be warned.
No,
we have muffled. A terrible...
I'm sorry. No, Bill, you are muffled. It's not just Carol.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have a terrible windstorm going on here, too,
uh-huh.
At the same time, so I don't know.
No, because I hear it, too. I'm on the porch, and it sounds muffled.
If I wasn't doing this before, then I'm going to have to hang up and call right back. As soon as you guys don't disappear, I'll call back in as the host, okay? So just give me a moment.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Carol.
Well, you know, see, that just blows my mind. You know, Tammy, we try so hard to educate the public about, you know, all these things that are going on and happening to our children. And a lot of people are coming forward. Yes, they are. We know this. And a lot of guys are coming forward. This is very good. But still in all, when it comes to the parents, and, of course, we know that many times the parents are the abusers, and that's not good. But the ones that care about their children, they say they do, they have to learn that, you know, the stats that we give out, we do this for a reason, you know. We're trying to help our children stay safer. And you know, on nights like tonight with Halloween, I love Halloween. I think it's a lot of fun and all this other stuff, except I eat too much candy. But, I'll be sorry tomorrow. But anyway, the point is, you know, it's still, we have a long ways to go. We have a long ways to go.
Yeah, we do have a long ways to go. We'll take whatever progress we get, you know, and we are educating the public a little bit more on you know, human trafficking and sex trafficking. Not so much with the incest, you know, even the word incest is kind of taboo. And then we've got the other abuses as well, you know, the physical abuse and the mental and verbal abuse, which aren't even illegal. So a neglect, of course, which is, but we need to protect our children. And I don't know how we can get society to understand that, you know, children have rights too. They're little humans. You know, a lot of people treat children like they're property, or they can do whatever they want to their children, and they can't. You know, people have got to come to terms with they are little human beings, you know, and they do have civil rights. I don't know.
Yes, they
we
do.
Need to treat them,
yeah, they do.
You know, we need to treat them with dignity.
Well, I don't know what it's going to take to get people to understand that. You know, it's I've done so many presentations, you know, in the last years. This year was kind of off because my health was off, so I didn't do what I wanted to do. But anyway, the point is I did a couple, but that was it. You know, we don't have to wait until April, you know, to educate people either. We should be, you know, doing this all year long, I think, if we have the opportunity, you know what I'm saying? So, but, you know, somehow we have to get it across to people that, you know, this is a dire problem. The kids go to the malls, all right? They're teenagers. They're 16 years old. They go to the malls. And a lot of times, you know, kids get into trouble in malls. And, of course, there's been terrible shootings and all this other stuff. You know, all kinds of things have happened. And I think that what parents have to realize is that, yes, it's good to let your kids, you know, grow up. Absolutely. Oh, I'm all for that. But we have to teach them safety. And somehow the parents themselves have to be taught safety so they can teach the kids safety. Kids going to the mall, like my granddaughter went the other day, and I was freaking. Now, my granddaughter just turned 20. She just turned 20. I can't believe it. She spoke to Bill when she was 11 years old. I had her come on the show,
that.
And now she's, and now she's 20. But I said to her, Lisa, you know, I don't want you to go alone. I don't want you to go alone. She said to me, Nana, when am I going to grow up? I said, I don't know. But I know my granddaughter, and I think kids, and I still consider a 20-year-old to be pretty young, okay, go in numbers. Don't go alone. I don't like seeing teenagers or even someone 20 years old, you know, go alone to the mall anymore because there's just so many problems. There just simply are, you know. We live in a very rough world today. Yes, we do. And so I wish that the parents would open up their minds and their hearts and get over this taboo thing, and I call it a thing at this point because I get so many, and realize that as a good parent, if they're going to teach their children as they're growing up all different kinds of things, how to cross the street, oh, my God. Don't take candy from a stranger. Well, all right, we have Halloween tonight. And I was really having fun with the people out on the street. But, I mean, generally speaking, go with your children so that they aren't alone. Don't let them go, you know, to certain places alone, like parks and places like that. This is not the 1950s. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm sure that in 1950 there was still a lot of problems. It's just that we didn't talk about it. Things got shoved under the rug. And we're not as open as we are today. However, we can talk, but if we don't do as parents what we need to do today, okay, which we should have done years ago, then our children are not going to be safe. That's all. And that's prevention.
Okay. I'm not sure where you guys went while I was gone, so I'm just going to let you guys get caught up here. I guess we're basically talking about prevention information. I want to say, if if a family member out there doesn't know what we're talking about, it's not your fault. Most families don't know, and that's because we were not raised in the way that we are recommending children be raised today. We were raised in a different way. We were raised without the information, the prevention information. And so if you're an adult now and have children and you're wondering what we're talking about, this is it. And it's up to us to learn what prevention is, and it'll be a new experience for us. So it's not your fault, is the point. It's not your fault that you had the taboo of talking about it. Our parents had a taboo of talking about it and didn't. So that's the model we have too. And same thing with, being confused about, we're not blaming you, in other words. Don't be confused. We're not saying you're bad parents because you're not doing it. We're saying we understand because we were not modeled this way. We were not brought up this way. What we'd like to happen, frankly, is for our kids to be modeled differently so that by the time they get to be parents, they'll automatically know at least a little bit better than we do about how to raise kids with a healthy sense of body safety and how to get help if they need it and what situations to avoid beyond strangers and how to report things, stuff like that. It's not the public's fault that they don't understand or that they have a taboo. It's what we were raised with. But now that you're hearing this from us, we hope that you'll take this seriously because it means a great deal. A child is not necessarily going to avoid being abused if they have prevention information given to them, but they'll be far less likely to be abused. And God forbid, if they are abused, part of the prevention process of giving them information is to be told that they need to speak out about it, that adults, no matter who the adult is, do not have a right to access to certain parts of their body, to acting with them in certain ways, to do photography with them, all kinds of things. And if, God forbid, that should happen to them, they need to report it. And they need to keep reporting it until an adult who is trusted, an appropriate adult, a trusted adult, says, I will take action on your behalf to the child. And, you know, because a lot of times we tell once, and when it falls on the wrong ears, as children, we make the assumption that, unfortunately, all adults are going to act the same way. Every adult is like every adult to us as children, and they're not. There are good people out there. There are a lot of good people who just aren't informed, but we need to inform them. So I don't want anyone who's listening to think that we're telling you you're bad people because you're not doing this yet. We are telling you that you can be better parents to your children who don't have any any defense other than what they're taught. But they're like sponges, Carol, so they soak this material up and they believe mom and dad, you know, and they'll be more likely to bring that information to mom and dad, if it ever, God forbid, happens to them, you know, or talk about anything, you know. So I just don't want people to worry that we're chiding them in some way. Now, we have a 760 caller. Let me see who that is. 760. 760. Oh, it might be Jaime. Looks like it is Jaime. All right. Well, let's welcome him to the show. Dr. Jaime Romo, thank you so much for calling in. Are you on the road tonight? Did you get home, or what's going on? Oh, he just hopped off. Okay. Well, we'll bring him back as soon as he calls back in. That is Jaime's phone number, the 760. And I'll introduce him again so that we'll be up to speed. He is from San Diego. He's an educator, consultant, author, and minister, commission minister. He promotes healing from abuse and prevention of child abuse, particularly abuse by religious authorities who are involved in religious setting, context of religious settings. He wrote a workbook I recommend called Healing the Sexually Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. He's a wonderful member of the NASCA family. We're delighted he has found it possible to call in tonight, and we're hopefully that he will be able to be with us perhaps once a month starting in November. But for now, let's welcome him to the show. Come on, Dr. Jaime Romo. Hi, Jaime. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Bill. Well, one, I apologize for being late. I was with a patient, and I know I'm a hospice chaplain these days, and so sometimes I am pulled. In an odd way, it relates to this show, and just overall, you know, how we deal with things that are out of our control or things that have, you know, happened to us, and you know, how we face those things and how we actually find ways to heal from them. You know, I was talking with the spouse of a patient, and he was talking about how he was physically, you know, feeling so like heavy and ill, and then the more we talked, turns out he was holding on to something of a kind of a damaged relationship and, you know, a lot of disappointment. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's how old experiences with different kinds of abuse or loss impact us when we don't recognize it and when we don't express it. And then, you know, kind of learn our way forward. But I think a lot of times, with abuse, with trauma, there's unresolved grief, and it becomes toxic. It has its impact on us physically and in the way that, you know, people then behave. They may avoid people or places or things, and all of a sudden we're not able really to be enthusiastic about things or even enjoy a lot of things because we're kind of accepting the way things are, or accepting and holding on to stuff that gets in the way.
Well, that's really, really true. I'm glad you're here, too, and explaining it that way. By the way, the hospice system, for any of you who, a lot of people are familiar with it, it's a wonderful system. Both my parents and actually all three of my family members had a hospice experience. My father and my sister both did. My mother was an Alzheimer's patient, so she was kind of in constant hospice for the last year of her life. But it's a terrific way for people to deal with. It's basically for patients who are probably terminal to have a relatively comfortable experience in the family, too, in the passing of their loved one. Any hospice is great. It's a terrific place to also to volunteer. We don't talk about hospice enough, probably, but it is a terrific way to volunteer your time. Go ahead, Jaime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and with that idea, I think there's a kind of a process to healing where whatever the experience is, we may be in that kind of hurting place, and it's right for us to take care of ourselves physically and, you know, find different ways that we can be safe and supported and so on, and that helps us in the healing part. I know the value of helping other people in some ways, and ideally it will come when we've taken care of ourselves a bit so that we can really be of service to others and not have things in us that get, you know, triggered or, you know, that we get kind of all emotionally flooded. So I think that's service is a great healing practice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. I totally agree. Carol, you want to make a comment about this? Go ahead.
Well, I know about hospice as well because of my husband, for God's sake. He was part of 9/11, and he was walking around with cancer for years, and we didn't even know it. And, you know, they determined that it was because of 9/11. But anyway, the point is I was, his caregiver for a long time, and watching him deteriorate, and then I realized, wow, I'm not a nurse, you know, I'm not a doctor, don't want to be, and quite frankly, I had to get hospice in because he had to have the medications that were, so very, very strong, you know, and morphine is nothing compared to what he was on, so, and morphine didn't even do anything for him, so that towards the end. It's a very hard time for family, and I thank God for hospice because I did deal with him. The cancer went to his, went to his brain. It affected his behavior. He got into some strange things that he shouldn't have. You know, it was like weed, but it was like not regular marijuana. It was the other kind. It was like spice and something called poison. It was poison, and it affected his behavior. So it was very, very difficult. So hospice played a very, very important role in my life because I was dealing with a person that I had married who became a very volatile individual, okay, very volatile. We didn't have the best of marriage anyway because I don't know how to pick. We've spoken about that before, haven't we, Bill? But on the other hand, he became, and that's okay. But he became so sick, Jaime. Okay, he became so sick. And without hospice, I don't know what I would have done. You know, it was really, you guys really deserve a lot of credit. You absolutely do. You help a lot of people.
Well, I describe myself in my role as call it a spiritual companion, and I don't mean religious particularly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't want that and have had bad experiences, whether it was abusive or just feeling kind of disillusioned. But people are still looking for something that helps them to connect. And so, I'm kind of a spiritual companion. And then with that idea, I think that's what we as a group are, or people who have done some healing work can be for others, is just a companion, to not necessarily do for or fix, but be with.
Mm-hmm.
Be with,
mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I agree. It's about being with more than, it's about shared experience. You know, part of the grief process often involves people who feel alone. Somebody feels alone. They feel like maybe somebody's died, and now they feel alone because of that death. And a spiritual companion like a Jaime can remind them that we're not alone. We are all interconnected, and we're all spiritual beings and so forth. So to help in the transition from either side of the transition, the person that's dying and also the family members who are confused and anticipating, you know, the loss. They already feel the loss. They're already feeling it. They're already experiencing a lot of things. And there's no right or wrong set of experiences here. The emotional run the gamut, you know, of possible things that you can be going through. And they're all appropriate, you know. A person trained like a Jaime knows all this stuff, but I'm just relating it to my understanding, you know. And it's kind of like he says, Carol and Tammy, it's kind of what we do here too. You know, the newcomer comes to us alone, often in early recovery, feels a kind of a grief. It is grief. It's the loss of the person they thought they were, and the realization that they're going to have to change things about themselves eventually, that comes along. And it's scary, you know, to have to leave your old self behind, you know, and sort of grow into the present moment instead of living in the past or the future. But being right here, right now, and having it be okay where you are at any particular time. Rather than preach, I want to go to Tammy, or go ahead, Jaime, you can make a comment, and then we'll go to Tammy.
I just wanted to join in that the idea of when people experience some harm, there's a loss of self in different ways. And when I got into, I did an internship at the VA, I remember that one of the questions someone asked me was like, well, what prepares you to do this, dealing with, you know, end of life, and it was real clear to me, having done a good amount of just my own kind of growth and healing, was I've had all kinds of mini deaths, you know, and I think, you know, in retrospect, those are really, really powerful and important opportunities or portals or areas where we grow. And so I just really value that. And you know, for anybody who might be feeling like they're in the middle of something that will, is just too terrible to heal from, and I think all of these life experiences really, they can be difficult, and then they open up possibilities for us to be so much more. But just appreciate what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a loss in trauma, in abuse, in losing relationships.
That's right, yeah. Tammy or Carol, would you like to make a comment?
Well, I really haven't had a lot of experience with hospice. I guess that's a good thing. I like the thought that if I am faced with that there is an organization, there is an organization out there that provides a service to help loved ones with the end of life or dealing with the end of life of a loved one. So that's that. But dealing with abuse and the loss of, sometimes, I guess I can only speak from my experience, but as I get on, go down the path, my recovery path, and become what I would like to think, more healthier and making better choices and choosing better relationships, there is a loss of, the bad relationships because, we don't accept what we once accepted. And, sometimes it's inevitable. We come up with people in our lives that, we want to please. We want, to include them in our little circle. And then when they disappoint us, sometimes we have to let it go. And there is that loss. I've dealt with that, here recently. Things that I put up with years ago in terms of a relationship, just glad to have a relationship no matter how healthy or unhealthy it is versus today, I don't need that type of relationship in my life. I'm sorry that you feel that way, but, I just can't go there. So sometimes there is a loss, having to step back from it as you get on your healing path. I hope that makes sense. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
No, that's perfect, Tammy, and I'll tell you why. At one time, I would have tolerated, I'm going to use the word tolerated, inferior, type of behavior from a person, a man, okay, and accepted his, his behavior as being, oh, that's just the way he is or whatever. And then I'd suffer from it because that person was far from perfect. None of us are perfect, okay? But today, if I'm going to get involved, with another individual, if I feel like it, and I don't quite feel like it yet, to be honest with you, but if I do, I'm going to set the standards higher. Because before, my standards were too low, okay? If they drank, oh, well, he only drinks a little bit. If they smoked pot, oh, well, he only smokes a little bit or whatever, And then, of course, later on, it would turn into a whole bunch and maybe even more. I have learned at this point in my life, in my healing journey, to set the standards higher for the next individual that I may allow to come into my life.
Sure. Absolutely. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's not just with a partner. I've noticed that it's with friends as well. And I've told the story a couple of times. There could be 10 people lined up, and 9 of them treat me like I'm a piece of gold. That one person that treats me like crap would be the one person that I would try to please. I would ignore the other 9 that treats me like a piece of gold and get upset because that one person, treated me like I was a clown or treated me badly or bullied me or, said mean things to me. And I think a lot of survivors may deal with this. I don't know. I have come in my healing path to realize that one person, I don't really care what they think about me anymore. I've got these 9 people over here think I'm pretty swell. So I'm learning, I'm trying to condition myself to focus in on the positive and the good and the quality relationships and let those bad relationships go. We talked about this a lot, you know, especially children, you know, adults who were abused as children, beaten, battered, put down, or whatever. We, and you said it, Carol, we choose bad relationships after that because a normal relationship is not normal to us. You know, a lot of times we have to learn what a normal relationship is to be able to accept it and not continuously pick the same type people that who abused us in our childhood. Just my thoughts.
Yeah. I'm done. That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
You know, another aspect of this, and I'll go back to Aimee in a second here, but another aspect of this is we began this particular discussion when Aimee came, but talking about the hospice, the world of hospice, and got into grief from that perspective. But I do want to point out that grief doesn't have to involve people. It can also involve principles or institutions. As an example, one of the things that Jaime is very well acquainted with is the sexual abuse of children in religious settings. And that would be, for example, a situation where a person who is traumatized in their adulthood is experiencing a kind of a grief that they can no longer belong to this community, comfortably belong to this community. And this is certainly how I felt, so I'll just talk about me. You know, I was very angry at the church for what had happened to me and at God and at all of the sacraments and at all of the ministers of that church, priests and brothers and so forth, the nuns. You know, I didn't want anything to do with Catholicism, yet I had been so Catholic, so brought up so Catholic, that to lose that part of me, which was a huge part of me, it defined who Bill was as a youngster, was grief. There was grief there. It was hidden by anger for a long time, but it ended up being that I was able to recognize that there had been a loss that I had never come to terms with. And until I was able to come to terms with it, I couldn't be comfortable in recovery around anything religious or spiritual or godlike or any of that stuff. That's grief too. And so, and I'm just saying grief can be the loss of your ability to drink. When you're a new alcoholic, I'll finish with this as another example. You're taught you can't have a relationship with alcohol anymore. But, you know, if you're a real alcoholic, and I am, you have had such a close relationship with alcohol, it's the one thing you've been able to depend on. And now they're telling you they're taking it away and saying you can recover, but the first step in recovery is removal from your best friend you've ever had, the thing you can rely on most. Well, guess what? That's grief, because I wanted that best friend. I had devoted years and years to my relationship with alcohol, and now I couldn't have it anymore. So these are a couple of examples of where grief does not have to be with an individual or a death. It can be removal of something, like I'm saying here, a principle or perhaps an institution or something in your life that you can no longer participate in that's been kind of snapped, taken away from you, especially if it's taken away quickly. I mean, I promised I'd go back to you, so any comment that you'd like to make, please do so.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, and I really appreciate what you said about, you know, be under the anger, or the grief is hidden by anger. And in my mind, there's a strong link when someone has a lot of anger or grievance, that behind that is grief. There's that link. They even sound alike. And so I think that's a real issue, and all kinds of loss normally, naturally will evoke an experience of grief. And I don't know that we're very good at that. Actually, today, you know, here's Halloween, and, you know, and I didn't grow up with a tradition, but I use it more and more now, where, you know, we look at Día de los Muertos, and we have an altar, and we have a kind of an ongoing appreciation for people, and it's not weird and it's not scary, and so it is a beautiful, you know, way to have grief become appreciation and healing and to maintain the connection rather than, like, in this country, I don't think we're good at grief at all. So as a kind of a national culture, we make it spooky, death, make it spooky, and we quickly run to cover feelings or to get distracted, So I just want to highlight that piece about the link between grievance and grief. I think we've got a lot of grieving that is healthy that we need to do collectively. And that idea about religious sexual abuse, well, one of the things about the loss with that is loss of community. And so I really appreciate that idea of it could be an institution, it could be not just an individual that we can be so identified with and find so much meaning and sense of community that we're not just challenging an individual for some kind of abuse, we're risking losing a whole communal identity. And even to this day, so we're not members and active participants in a kind of a Catholic tradition, but my in-laws are very, very identified with that. And just yesterday, my wife was at a short visit with a brother who was basically telling her she's in the wrong church and that she's, he's concerned with her soul and that kind of stuff. And she's got to say, I can't talk with you. There's a loss of relationship with a group, or in this case, a person that she does care about. So
right.
It's a big deal, and I appreciate you bringing that up.
No, it's a big deal. It's a big deal for a lot of religions. So if you're a Jew, you really identify with other Jews, even if you're a Reformed Jew and the others, many others might be Hasids or Orthodox or whatever. If you're a Jew, you're a Jew. And if Judaism turns its back on you, shuns you, as happens in other churches, it's a big deal to be shunned. And it's kind of what that's kind of what it feels like when you've been abused in a religious situation. In my case, the church, the Catholic Church. I'm now more comfortable with various. I can go to any church. I've been going recently to a Christian church down the street that a friend of mine told me about, and it's fine. I also, however, I should reveal that I went to a Catholic church earlier this week and because I wanted to pick up a bulletin. I hadn't had I'd gone to this church 10 years ago, but I hadn't gone back. And I went and got a bulletin, and I had to go to the rectory to get the bulletin. And it's so familiar to me what a rectory is like, what a church is like, the services they do. So familiar still to this day, because I'm deeply upbringing was deeply embedded and identify with the Catholic community, like you're saying. No matter where I go, I can be comfortable in a Catholic setting. It's still at this point, there are maybe some things that I'm not going to wholeheartedly throw myself into. But it's not about being uncomfortably being Catholic or around Catholics anymore since my recovery is transmitted. Now, one more thing I'll say is that in that bulletin, I was reminded that this Sunday is the celebration of what the Catholic Church do about grief. It's called All Souls Day. All Souls Day is the first Sunday of November, generally speaking. I think it's whatever's around November 1st, I think, is also, if I remember. All Saints Day and All Saints Day is called. All Saints and All Souls. Some people refer to it as one or the other. I don't think there's a differentiation.
Yeah.
I might be wrong. But it's the same weekend. And so that's what's happening. And that is the Catholic version of the celebration we think of as Halloween, basically.
Right.
The expression of the separation of the people that have been lost with quotes around it, died in the past period of time, year or more, or in the past, that we recognize them as souls, and that they have a life beyond the physical life that we know them best in their physical being, but we know they have a soul. So we celebrate their soul having made the transition, I guess, is the best way to put it, I think. I don't know if that was exactly accurate. Jaime or not, but it's pretty close.
Well, before we go on, let me stop you guys if you don't mind. Bill, I think you have Darlene in queue. She's been there patiently waiting. Yes.
Oh, well, let's get her on.
She's been there for a few minutes.
15 minutes or so. You've been around, so you've heard some of the last comments. Welcome to the show. We do have Dr. Jaime Romo with us. And we have Carol and Tammy and myself. So now we have a pretty good panel, finally. It's up to Jaime where we want to go.
I've been here for a while.
I know. You've been here for 15 minutes.
I heard y'all talking about what's that called when they people come in the home when somebody's dying?
Hospice.
Oh, sorry, my mind's just kind of wrong. I've been doing bills today, so my mind's just gone. So anyway, I've got a lot to say about the hospice, and I agree with you about the church community and everything. Because here I grew up as a Christian myself, but because the belief that you're not supposed to divorce a husband based on abuse or anything, you have to have the proof that he cheated or whatever, and without that cheat, so I'm supposed to stay married to him regardless. And so I was looking at one of the elders said, it's best to let him kill me. That's my only way to heaven. But no matter when I went to church, they told me, well, I can't go there, I can't go there, I can't go there. Different churches, you know, with that same religious faith, okay? And so that really hurt me bad. And it still affected me, or I'm afraid to go to any church. I could go sit at the back row some of the time, but as far as getting in there and sitting on up front or in the middle like I used to do, I can't do that no more.
Right.
I get really sick
of
my stomach.
Nobody's saying you need to do any of this. We're just simply, each of us has our own experience with our belief in a higher power or not, you know. And that's what we can call it, or not. And it's okay. You can be an atheist or an agnostic and belong to NASCA, too, of course. There's no requirement for any of this. But what we're really talking about tonight, Darlene, is grief, and all of us have grief. That's a common denominator thing.
Right.
The hospice could be in-home or it could be in a facility. There are different kinds of hospices. But that's where Jaime spent a lot of the day today. And that's how we got on this topic to begin with. But what we're really talking about, though, is grief and how we all have to deal with different kinds of grief. And that's not a religious thing, although it can be expressed within our various religious communities and traditions in different ways. Okay, so that's really the talk that we're having.
I heard you talking about it's good that you help the people helping in hospice and the grief thing. Mm-hmm. That is very great. The doctor, what's his name?
But I'm taking it beyond that. What I'm saying, Darlene, is and Jaime, no, can you listen? Okay. Jaime said that in NASCA, we have the opportunity to not only deal with our own grief, but to help other people through theirs. That's where I'd like to go with this, because this is a NASCA show. It's not a show about religion.
Right.
And all of us experience some kinds of grief, multiple types of grief, frankly, you know, especially in early recovery, or if we're newcomers, that will come up. And then it'll come up later. Perhaps we'll lose a parent or something. You know, we'll have different kinds of experiences of grief. But here is
that
one thing that
grief.
We have. Another thing we have in common, though, is our ability to be of service to each other. If we have any kind of experience with grief, that we can share with someone who's new to it or is in the middle of it. Because you can forget some of this stuff when you're in the middle of it too, Jaime. You know, we have an opportunity here, kind of an ongoing opportunity to be of service to each other in many ways, but this is one of them. And it's, you know, it's something we shouldn't miss.
Yeah, one of the griefs that I know that a lot of us have suffered besides the loss of someone is the grief of losing our childhood, our innocence.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right. That's right.
And I appreciate like a couple of things that you know, certainly the grief of loss of childhood. I think that a lot of us carry things that have around for years and years, and just to acknowledge this, just to recognize that is the first step in my mind. There's an expression to name the disease is to be able to cure it, and just to recognize that there's something that was done that shouldn't have been done, or things that should have been done that weren't been that we didn't experience, and not to that's the end point. That's just the beginning. Then to be able to recognize how we're still affected and how compare that to how we really want to be. What's our self today that we really want to live into, and then do the kind of integration work, but that allows us then to really move forward and not continue to live in that kind of state of unresolved, you know, regret or bitterness. So that's, I think it's a really important, powerful thing to acknowledge. Things should have been different.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can take on with that one there. I think with grief, I mean, I can speak, like Tammy says, she speaks for herself, I'm going to speak for myself, but I think this is kind of universal. I think that we can have a lot of grief because the lives that we grew up with, okay, in our lives, the way we had to live, with our family members, we wanted so badly to, you know, I look back with a lot of sadness. I do. Because I would have liked to have had a better relationship with my mother or with my bio father, if that's what he is, and my stepfather, and I always call him my goofy brother because of what he did. Okay, all these people, I find a sadness. I used to be very, very angry, Jaime, at all these people that I just mentioned because they didn't recognize me for the person who I am. And they didn't include me as part of their family, okay? I was always the outcast, and I knew it, and they told me that. That's why I ran away. But the point is this, I can look back now today, you know, at all these things that happened and feel a very heavy sense of grief that I didn't have really a mother. I didn't really have a father. And my brother wasn't a brother to me. You know, and all these things. And at one time I looked at it with anger. I was so angry at these people. I really wanted just to harm them. I really did, because they were harming me and they didn't care, each in their own way. Whereas today, I'm not going to say that I forgive them, honey, but I can look back at it as it was their failings, it was their faults, it was not my fault, and it never will be my fault. It never was my fault. We have something here that's called Some Thoughts, and one of the very first sentence it has here, we are innocent and guilt-free, yet share feelings of shame and fear. Well, as we're going on our healing journey, we do have sometimes shame and fear because of some of the things that happened to us. But as we get on in our healing journey, we realize that, hey, we were innocent and we are guilt-free. It was not our fault for what happened to us. And it says we should not, even accept any responsibility for abuse in childhood. But yes, I can feel grief because I too didn't have a childhood. None of us had childhoods many times. That is the case. And then we suffer from all different things like Jaime had brought up at the beginning when he first came on, how it affects our body, how it affects us spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally. We suffer from low self-esteem and then all different kinds of even illnesses, you know, and on it goes. And we have scars that we have to deal with, and that can be a permanent part of our life if we let it define us. And that's what we try not to do. Some people suffer from a type of insanity, which can involve deep depression and anger. You know, we have grief in us that is so angry, that is so hurtful, that and we do suffer from depression and anger. And that's something that we have to learn with help, you know. I received help when I was approximately in my early 30s. And I had grief, if you want to speak about grief, because the Catholic Church did help me. It saved my life. And I became very filled with grief with all the things of, you know, they've done over the years, and all this, the truth of the Catholic Church has come out. Not just the Catholic Church, many churches, many organizations. But we find out as we go along in life that the people that we thought were perfect or near perfect are not perfect, and there's sadness with that too. But life also has a lot of joy, right? And that's one thing that we never seem to talk too much about because we're so busy trying to heal from grief, which does take all different kinds of angles, so it has all different kinds of angles. But I can understand how you feel, Darlene, when you spoke about your grief with the church, because today I'm not really affiliated with any church. I consider myself to be a Christian, and I do go and do good deeds, not because I have to, but because I want to. And last night I was on the phone with an alcoholic until 2:30 in the morning, who wasn't drinking at the time. But we had a conversation, and their grief was because they had to give up alcohol. Well, I know what that's like. I gave it up in 1981. And let me tell you something. I had to learn how to live all over again without my alcohol, and that was not easy. So grief takes many forms, many forms. But recovery is possible, and so is happiness. And it's better to recover together than to survive alone.
Yes, yeah. I want to hold up a couple of thoughts. One is that connection between grief and how it shows up. There's a writer, I think he's a physician, actually, named Alan Wofeld. I think it's W-O-F-E-L-D? Or F-E-L-T. He's out of Colorado. He's got lots of books about the grieving process and healing, and one of the things he points to is just how a lot of people with PTSD actually have that as a result of unresolved grief, not necessarily you know, war situations or, you know, extreme violence or things like that. And so that's how powerful it is when we don't resolve it. And the other thought is, I really appreciate you bringing up joy. Sometimes we can be so caught up in this healing process that we maybe miss the other side. And Brené Brown has a very popular TED Talk that kind of launched her into a new kind of writing career. But she's a sociologist, and the TED Talk is called Power of Vulnerability. And one of her big ideas is that, you know, we can often, like, try to focus on the stay happy part, you know, the just keep our emotions up and avoid, you know, the grief. And the reality is that it's when we are open-hearted, when we're allowing ourselves to feel what we feel and deal with, you know, uncertainty and loss and whatever it is, that allows us actually to feel joy. And so I guess I would just point to that we make sure that we give ourselves some experiences of enjoyment, that we give ourselves, let ourselves, I forget who was saying, maybe Tammy was saying about we can have 9 people who, you know, think we're awesome and 1 that we focus on because they don't. And, you know, so give ourselves some enjoyment and give ourselves, you know, a focus of what do I really want, and who do I really want, you know, to share this journey. And the other stuff is there. You know, an analogy of if you're going to make some kind of meal and you walked into this giant kitchen and it had every ingredient you could possibly imagine. You wouldn't get lost in all of the ingredients. You would just look for the ones and focus on the ones that you need and take those and use them and not get upset about the other ones because they're there. Don't spend too much time or energy with them, I think. So I would take that as, I don't know, we work with the ingredients we have in us. We acknowledge them. And it's really important to allow ourselves to feel those things. And then allow ourselves, give ourselves the focus of what we will enjoy. You know, that's an important start, because then that leads to really enthusiasm, kind of like really feeling, you know, the beauty of living. So it's a couple of thoughts, mm-hmm. but thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome. Well, we have to realize, too, that we deserve to be happy. See, that's the thing. A lot of times people, first of all, they don't know how to be happy because they've been miserable for so long. And then as they get along in their healing journey, and I really do suggest that people who are so down low, you know, with that feeling of, you know, they don't know how to be happy and all this other stuff, it's good to be with other people. It's good to be in groups. It's good to, you know, be on NASC. It's good to be in some of the groups that we tell people about where they can learn more about self-help and so forth if they're not going to go to a therapist or they can't go to a therapist. And so, you know, it's we do deserve good things in life. Yes, we do. And I told my kids the other day, I'm not young anymore. No, I'm not. And you know what? For the rest of my years, I'm going to learn and I'm going to allow myself to be happy. And I shocked the heck out of them. And if that means taking a cruise, or which I've never done, or whatever, it can be anything. Whatever it is, something that'll make me happy. Come more in touch with that child within, okay? As we speak about what is going to make that child happy, you know, so that the remainder of my time on this earth, whether it be 10 years, 15 years. Way further than that, but you know, it's time. It's time for all of us to look and see joy, and to stop, you know, and to understand what joy is, for God's sake. To be able to walk into a garden and see the flowers. At one time, I could walk into a garden and be flowers all over the place, and I was so filled with anger, hate, resentment, and all this other stuff that goes along with it, and rightfully so, okay. But I wouldn't even see the flowers. And I don't want to end my life that way. I want to be able to start enjoying life. And I deserve it. We all do.
Yes, well, we're having quite a good discussion tonight. Jaime, where would you like to take it next? By the way, we have roughly 15 minutes left in the show. So it's up to you, Jaime.
Well, thanks. I mean, I would just want to highlight, and maybe, you know, others can join around. When we look back at ourselves or other people in time that was very painful, that it naturally can bring up anger, deep rage, revenge. I mean, that makes sense. And then on the other hand, I was hearing earlier a lot of compassion. And mm-hmm. And if that comes from sometimes recognizing what happened to us was not our fault, so we can have compassion for ourselves. And from that, we might even be able to appreciate that others, whatever they've done, that they're flawed, they're probably wounded. And just that focus of compassion, I mean, it's a powerful, transforming kind of a practice for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an experience years ago when I first kind of was in touch with all of my pain and rage that had been bottled up for, you know, 30 years, and then I was expressing all of that. I did a workshop that it was about basically grief work, and at first it led me to appreciate that I had been abandoned and abused and then wrapped in shame growing up, and then I realized that I internalized that, and I had abandoned and abused myself, and no matter how successful or much achievement I had, I was still wrapped in shame. I was still kind of doing that to myself. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I've abandoned the people around me in different ways. I've been abusive, not physically, but certainly demanding and perfectionistic and so on. And that kind of has wrapped other people in shame, people I care about most.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that process of recognizing, okay, well, if I could feel some compassion for myself of things that happened to me, oh, now I can realize, you know, I can have compassion for other people who I've impacted. And so I'm interested in other thoughts about your journey and how compassion has been helpful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I can honestly say that just recently, now I've only done one run, but I am now a part also of the New York City run. That's the Midnight Run, and that's for the homeless. To help feed them, to help clothe them. We put together all different kinds of things at the church, and then we take off. This is a church where it doesn't matter what religion you are. And so we put together, you know, soup and sandwiches and nothing fancy, but whatever's donated to us, and then sweaters and hats, and because winter's coming, and all kinds of things. And we go into New York City. And we did this on the 19th. Now, I can't wait for the next run because I enjoyed myself so. And because I know what the streets are like, I've been there. I enjoyed the people, actually. It was a good feeling. And it was a good feeling of feeling good, you know, of helping other people. This happens to many survivors. We get to the point in our life because of where we've been. We can see where people are. That's why I call like our antennas that go up. We can sense, you know, their pain because we had the same type of pain. And, you know, with the survivors, they can either sit back and just enjoy their enjoy their recovery. But then there are those survivors that really want to get out there and try and help. And this is what NASCA is all about. We're trying to help other people. So we've reached that point in our lives where the past is the past. It's always going to be there. I just look at it differently now. I can go beyond that hurt, that pain, that anger, that grief, all the things that we spoke about earlier, and go out and help other people. And that's how you know that you've gone on to your healing journey. You've gotten to a certain point where you don't just look at, you don't internalize, you know, you don't internalize anymore all of the things that happened in the past. You're now able to say, yes, that person had problems, or those people have problems, not just that person. But, and I'm always going to have problems, but I can do good for the world, for the people, by teaching them what I've learned. And that's how we help society.
I think this is true for people from every walk of life. But for those of us who feel a sense of low self-esteem, you know, to miss the opportunity for the joy of being compassionate is to cheat yourself. You have wasted, or not wasted, your life has been spent in a lot of pain or shame or anger or whatever, a lot of negative, you know, things that can happen you've experienced. Now it's about time to experience some of the positive ones, the joy, and that comes from realizing that you do have something to offer and people who need what you have to offer, and you freely give it. And this is not just for people who are in recovery from child abuse or from anything. It's for normal people, too, is what I'm saying. It's for everybody. It's just this kind of a spiritual axiom that we all have something. We're all related, and we all have something to offer each other, and to not offer it is to deprive ourselves too, and not just the person that we might help, but to deprive ourselves. So it's an important lesson, I think, for people to take to heart, and to try and, you know, follow a path that gives them this experience, no matter what walk of life they're from. I mean, that's just how I see it. I could be wrong, right, Jaime? Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I got it a little bit differently. I agree with you a lot, but I also agree with some of the people still may not be ready. They might just start on their healing journey, or they might still be uncovering some things, and it's difficult for them to heal because they might be around the bad people, the wrong people still, or whatever. But it is good that for them to take their time, and when they feel like helping others, which I'm sure when I was first started healing, I still went out there trying to help others, you know. So even while we're being hurt, even for recovery, we might see somebody that's just right there, an old lady, you know, pushing a shopping cart from the grocery store, and she's struggling with the bags, putting them in a car or something, you know. Run to her, go help her, you know. Little things like that, you know, that makes a big difference. It shows people that you care, you know.
That's right.
But,
most of the stuff that we need in life we learned in kindergarten, you know, and that's one of them, is to share and be generous and say thank you. And so, I mean, do unto others as you have them do unto you. Okay, but don't, instead of making the exception, instead of speaking to the exception, you know, let's speak to the positive of whatever is being shared by anybody. And the point is that we learn these things when we're young. And these are the lessons of life. And then we promptly, many of us, forget about them. I'm just trying to rekindle, you know, a sense of we're still in the same physical experience. Maybe we're 60 years older now, but we're still having a physical experience, but we are a spiritual being. And there are lots of spiritual beings around us that we can help. And it feels good for us, yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. We don't do it from the perspective of I'm going to do it because I'll feel good to do it. We do it because it's right. And we, by the way, happen to feel good when we're walking the right kind of path. That's kind of just how I see it. We're getting down to the end of the show. Let me say there's six minutes left. So each one of us will have a minute or two to wrap up final comments, and then we'll give the last couple of minutes to Dr. Jaime as well, and then we'll be done. But these shows go fast when we have a topic like this. Who would like to make the first last comment?
Well, I will. I'll go really quickly. I wanted to thank everybody who called in on the show and anyone who may be listening. Dr. Jaime, thank you for your insight. Darlene, glad you called in. It's always good to have you on the panel. Carol, thank you for your input. And Bill, you too as well. Love you. You're in the other room. So happy Halloween. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Carol, or how about you going next?
Okay, I'll go next. We had a really good discussion tonight. And one thing that I think we've all learned, you know, as we're going along on our healing journey, yes, Darlene, you made a point. You know, going out and helping someone with a shopping cart or something, that's not just a little thing. That's a big thing to that person who needs help with their shopping cart, okay? And we can do that, and it can snowball and go on and on and on as we get better, you know, as we get, you know, heal more. So, you know, we learned a lot tonight. And Dr. Jaime, I want you, you know, to know that we're thankful that you called in, and I hope you call in more often.
Well, we've extended the invitation for Jaime to replace one of our co-hosts who has bowed out. It would be the third Thursday of the month for Jaime's slot if he would like to fill it, and I hope he does too. But Darlene, before we go to Jaime, a comment from you to finalize the show for you.
Yes, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. I think what I did here, it was an awesome topic and everything. And for the listeners out there, do not lose hope. Even if you feel like you might not be as far as we may be, Don't judge like that. Talk with us. Get it out. Whatever. We're here for you.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Very good message. All right, Jaime, as I promised, you get the last opportunity here. Let me see. You can have like 2.5 minutes, perhaps. What would you like to say?
Well, thanks. Thanks for, first of all, for everyone who's participated. What I was thinking right now, Bill, you said, that we're all connected. And I'm not the expert about science, but I understand that there's, a couple of years back, there was something called the Higgs boson particle. Some people nicknamed it the God particle, but that's not its official name. But the idea is that, at the subatomic level, there's a space. I guess for a long time people have thought, they're just like, there's stuff there. But in reality, at the center of every atom, there's a space. And that's what they're calling the Higgs boson particle. And it's that space that, if it weren't there, we would all kind of like implode. We'd collapse. And so that same space is in every atom. And in a sense, that connects everybody at a physical level, at a, cellular level. And there are other ways that people think about connection. Apparently there's a great documentary, by the way, called I Am. And it has kind of the science that we're all connected. And one of the examples that comes up in that is the element argon. It has one of the longest half-lives of the elements. And so over the centuries, these argon elements have been in every breath. And so they've been recycled. This one element is mixed in with every breath. And so we've all shared in the same breath as, Gandhi or, Hitler or, the prophets. And and there's just so much to say that we are connected at deep levels that we may not ever think about, because we can often imagine ourselves as being separate. And so I really want to highlight that as, at a physical level, at an atomic level, at a subatomic level, we are so much more connected than we realize. And then in this journey, the human experience that Eckhart Tolle talks about, the pain body, that, this is our experience. Our bodies absorb pain and our emotions absorb pain. And that's not our deepest self, but, we share that too. And so I appreciate this space, this conversation, this community where people are sharing their journeys through this pain body, the lessons that only come by walking through and walking with. And so one of you said, that how important it is to go with others. So there's an expression that, if you cover all the letters of the words well and ill, you cover the L's, basically you have we and I. And there's something about healing in being well, in connecting with others, and going together, and going with. And there's something about caring isolation of the topic of the pain and all that leads to illness. So thanks for the invitation. I'll do my best to hold on to Thursdays. And
love to have you. It would be the third Thursday of the month each month, once a month. We don't want to make it too extravagant or too difficult, but that's the slot that's opened up. And unless I need to move somebody around, which I can attempt to do if it turns out the third Thursday is not good for you, that's the one that is open. So we'd love to have you as a regular co-host on the third Thursday of November, starting the third Thursday of November, Jaime. And thank you so much. Boy, you gave us a lot to think about there in the last 3 minutes. I gave him 3 minutes. You gave us like a dissertation we could spend the rest of the year talking about. But anyway, we are all connected. And I'm not sure exactly how, I do believe it. tonight we were graced with Dr. Jaime Romo from San Diego being our co-host, and we'd really appreciate everybody else that was here as well and anybody that was listening. We'll be back tomorrow night with a special guest. I hope you'll join us then. This is Bill in Florida saying God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Blog Talk Radio.